Hello! I'm very excited to announce that we now have merchandise for Bedtime Stories with R.A. Spratt. You can order t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, notebooks and coffee cups, all with the show's new logo on it. They look super cool, so check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes for the online store, or you can go to my website, raspratt.com, and click on the merchandise banner. So if you have been enjoying the stories, please do consider ordering something to support the show and help me keep kicking this can down the road. Hello and welcome to Bedtime Stories with me, R.A. Spratt. Well, welcome to the fifth series of this podcast. This series, we're going to step away from the Pesky Kids for a while, just for a few months. We'll be coming back to do the Pesky Kids books 4 and 5 in 2023, hopefully January or February. But until then, I'm going to go back to doing weekly episodes, and I'll be doing all the things I started out with, things like fractured fairy tales, Greek myths, Norse myths, twisted histories, tall tales, and chapters from my books. So that's actually how I'm going to start off today. I'm going to read to you a chapter from the last Friday Barnes book that came out in January of this year, 2022. I actually thought I had read this story to you on the podcast already. I assumed I had because it's like my favorite reading. I read it at the book launch. But when I went back and checked the episodes and then double checked and then triple checked, I'm pretty sure I haven't done this on the podcast. So I'm going to do it now because it's a really fun story. Now, before I get into it, I should remind you of the starting point before we get into this. So it's a Friday Barnes story from book 10, Friday Barnes Undercover. And at the start of this book, they're in Italy because book 9 was all set in Italy and they did a school excursion there. And there was all sorts of crime at the Uffizi that Friday helps solve. So at the start of this book, they're still in Italy and the school group is staying at a convent. So that's where we pick up. Friday's exhausted, having just solved a crime, and she's asleep in bed. So this is chapter 2, A Call in the Night. Thud, thud, thud. Ah! Friday woke up suddenly. It took her a moment to realise that there was someone knocking at the door. Who's that? She wondered. Shh, mumbled Melanie as she rolled over and tried to get comfortable. If we're quiet, they'll go away. Friday, I know you're in there, called a recognisable voice. It was Parker, a boy so hapless he often needed Friday's help to get him out of scrapes. Go away, Parker, said Friday. It's the middle of the night. Really, said Parker. My watch says it's 8 p.m. I'm pretty sure it's right because we just finished dinner. Friday tried putting a pillow over her head to drown out the sound. And I don't think 8 o'clock is the middle of the night, prattled on Parker. I'm pretty sure midnight is the middle of the night. I'm not good at maths, but I think that's still 4 hours away. Friday looked at her own watch. It read 8:04 p.m. How long have we been asleep for? She asked. She'd been so tired and in such a deep sleep, she'd lost her bearings. It must have only been a couple of hours. Not long enough, grumbled Melanie. I think 8 o'clock is more like early evening, Parker was still talking. It's hard to tell because people eat dinner later here in Italy, so maybe for them it's late afternoon. Friday's head felt thick with exhaustion. Her body was achy too. It had been a crazy day, and apparently it wasn't over yet. She swung her feet out of bed. No, don't do it, pleaded Melanie. If I don't, he'll never stop talking, said Friday, as she opened the door. What trouble are you in now? Oh, it's not for me, said Parker. Not this time, anyway. It's Binky. Binky, said Melanie. This news woke her up. But he's not here. Binky was Melanie's older brother. He'd moved to Oslo to be close to his girlfriend, Ingrid, who just happened to be the Crown Princess of Norway. This was an arrangement the King of Norway only tolerated because Binky had agreed to serve 2 years in the Norwegian army to demonstrate his devotion. No, agreed Parker. He's on the telephone. Can you believe it? The nuns have one of those old-fashioned type of phones. It's actually attached to the wall by a cable. It's like something out of an old movie. Anyway, he rang them up because he wanted to talk to Friday. Friday was soon jogging up to the office of the main courtyard. She would have run faster, but Melanie was with her, and Melanie didn't run, not even when it was her brother in trouble. Melanie's legs and lungs were just not capable of it. Plus, Melanie had enough faith in her friend's detective abilities to know that a couple of seconds' delay was unlikely to be crucial. When they got to the cloisters, Friday spotted the phone. It did look antique. Apart from the technology being old, that colour of olive plastic had not been fashionable for many decades. The handset was hanging down by its cable. Friday scooped it up. Hello?
Friday, is that you? Asked Binky.
His voice was crackly. Friday wasn't sure whether this was because he was calling long distance or because the telephone was a museum piece.
Yes, it's me. Melanie's here too, said Friday.
Melanie had caught up and was standing alongside Friday, her ear pressed to the handset so she could listen in.
What's the problem? Oh, thank goodness I got hold of you, said Binky.
He sounded very upset.
I'm in a terrible mess.
What happened? Asked Friday. There was a delay on the line, so it was awkward knowing when to speak and when to listen.
They've locked me up. I'm in a jail cell, said Binky.
There was definitely a sob in his voice as he got these words out. Friday felt a lump in her throat. She knew too well how awful it was to be in a jail cell. Sitting in a room doesn't sound that bad, but sitting in a room you can't leave, not ever, because powerful people have decided that you are bad, that is a horrible feeling.
Binky, it's okay, said Friday. Just tell me what happened. I'll try to help. I'm up on charges of plikfraskrivels, said Binky.
What's plikfraskrivels? Asked Melanie.
I don't know, wailed Binky.
I don't speak much Norwegian, said Friday. Melanie had taken out her phone and looked it up. Here it is. It means dereliction of duty.
It does? Oh, no, said Binky. They don't like it in the army when you do that.
Did you do it? Asked Friday.
I don't know, said Binky. I don't even know what dereliction means.
He was sounding emotional again. It means a shameful failure to fulfil your duties, said Friday.
Oh, said Binky.
Did you fail to fulfil your duties? Asked Friday.
Well, I can see how they might think that I did, said Binky.
What did you do? Asked Melanie, or not do?
Well, I was on guard duty, said Binky. And when you're on guard duty, it's very important to guard your post. Guarding is meant to be the focus.
Yes, said Friday. There were a lot of things she might have said here, like, duh, or no kidding. But her main goal was to not frighten Binky so he could tell the rest of his story. So she kept it simple. So what happened?
They found me outside my guard post, said Binky, lying face down in the snow.
I can see how they might take that as a dereliction of duty, said Friday.
Yes, agreed Binky.
Were you taking a nap? Asked Melanie. She was a great napper herself, and Binky was her brother, so perhaps it ran in the family.
Oh, no, said Binky. Well, actually, I guess in a way, yes. But it wasn't a nap I wanted to take. I was knocked unconscious.
By who? Asked Friday.
A polar bear, said Binky.
You were knocked unconscious by a polar bear outside your guard post? Asked Friday. She was repeating what Binky had said back to him because it sounded so crazy she wanted to make sure she had not misheard.
Yes, said Binky.
I can see why they don't believe you, said Friday. That doesn't really sound very likely. Are people often knocked unconscious by polar bears in that area?
No, said Binky. At least, I don't think so. My Norwegian isn't that good. And sometimes the other fellows, they don't tell me things because they think it's funny.
This doesn't sound good, said Friday.
I know, said Binky. My commanding officer is very cross with me. I'm facing a disciplinary hearing on Tuesday morning. If I'm found guilty, I'll be dishonourably discharged from the army. And Ingrid's father won't let her go out with someone dishonourable. And if I can't go out with Ingrid, it will break my heart.
He had definitely started crying now.
You need a lawyer, Binky, said Friday, right now. Oh, I've got one, said Binky, but he says he can only argue with the evidence he's got, and because I was unconscious, it's a mystery what happened. As soon as he said that, I thought of you. You're so good at solving mysteries. Friday, please, you will help me, won't you?
Of course, said Friday. Binky was such a good soul, she couldn't let him down. We can fly out to Oslo straight away, said Melanie.
Oh, thank you, Melanie, said Binky. Thank you, thank you. I'm sure it'll be all right if you and Friday come to help. And if it isn't all right, I'll feel much better if you're here to talk to. Everyone's so cross with me. It's horrible.
Don't worry, said Friday. We'll get to you as soon as we can. Half an hour later, Friday and Melanie were at Firenze Santa Maria Novella, the main railway station in Florence. Melanie had tried to arrange a flight to Oslo, but there had been a volcanic eruption in Iceland, so there were no flights going in or out of Scandinavia. The quickest way to get to Norway would now be by train. It was a 32-hour trip from Florence. If they didn't miss any connections, they should be able to get there by the morning of Binky's trial. Friday enjoyed the train trip. It was painfully long, but they had to change trains in so many different countries at such strange hours of the day and night that it was never boring. There was a lot to see out the window as they travelled from the Mediterranean climate of Italy with olive trees and vineyards, up to the Pyrenees and the spectacular mountains of Switzerland, then on to the forests and farmland of Germany, before eventually crossing a network of bridges through Denmark and up further into Scandinavia. Friday used the trip to learn some Norwegian. She knew most Norwegians spoke English very well, but she considered it only polite to learn as much of the language as possible when visiting a country. Friday also tried to find e-books to download on Norwegian military law, but they were all in Norwegian. Plus, they were so complex, she doubted even a fluent Norwegian speaker would be able to understand much of them. When their train finally arrived in Oslo, it was so early in the morning that it was still dark. "Where is Binky's military base?" asked Friday with a yawn. She was feeling very bleary-eyed. It was exciting to be in Norway, but it was 4 in the morning, and Friday's body clock wanted her to be in bed. "Bardufoss," said Melanie. "Where's that?" asked Friday. 1,500 kilometres north of here," said Melanie. "What?" asked Friday. "How are we going to get there?" "Taxi," said Melanie. But Friday was still half asleep and her brain was struggling to compute this information. It would take 24 hours to drive that far. "I know," said Melanie. "That's why we're not driving. I've arranged a taxi chopper." Friday looked at her blankly. "A helicopter," said Melanie. "There's a helipad on the roof of the station." "Oh," said Friday. She forgot sometimes just how rich Melanie was. Friday did not care for helicopters. She'd been in them a few times. They were very loud and very shaky. Also, Friday knew too much about physics to enjoy the experience. She was well aware that even aeronautical engineers didn't really understand why aircraft stayed aloft. She couldn't enjoy riding in a vehicle that moved at 250 kilometres per hour, 3 kilometres above the ground, and yet no one understood how it worked. She just spent the whole time acutely conscious of how close she was to death. They'd been flying for over 2 hours before the sun began to rise, and Friday could make out the countryside below. The vast expanses of dark forest looked like something out of a storybook where children got lost while leaving a trail of breadcrumbs. There was farmland with the grass starting to yellow from the autumn frosts, and there were lots of fjords, rivers and lakes with water so deep it looked almost black. By the time the helicopter landed at Bardufoss, it had been a long journey. In this day and age of air travel, you can fly from one side of the planet to the other and walk out into the terminal to see the exact same shops and the same terminal layout and the same car hire companies outside. This journey had not been like that. Having travelled 4,000 kilometres by train and now helicopter, the distance travelled had felt very real. They'd seen the landscape slowly change before them. As the helicopter landed, they were under no illusions. They knew they were arriving somewhere very different. A taxi, the car kind, took them from the helipad to the army barracks where Binky was being held. The barracks town of Bardufoss was both underwhelming and overwhelming at the same time. The countryside was staggeringly beautiful. Lush green forests lined the roads, and in the distance there were beautiful snow-capped mountains. But the architecture was not what Friday had expected. It was very functional. Friday supposed it had to be, given the extreme cold weather for most of the year. But the 1970s style of the houses and public buildings was strangely like the state public school she'd attended before Highcrest. Friday didn't realise that they'd arrived at the base at first because it didn't look like her idea of a military base. It was more like a summer camp. She wasn't sure what she'd been expecting. Certainly more fencing and security. Aside from the uniformed guard at the entrance, it could have been a high school. Once they'd signed in at the front office, Friday and Melanie were taken across to the guardhouse. They were shown into an interview room, and after a short wait, Binky was brought in to talk to them. As soon as he stepped into the drab grey room, Melanie rushed forward to wrap him in a hug. "Oh, Binky, you look wonderful." Binky had always been tall and athletic, but now he was positively giant. He'd finally stopped growing at 6'4", but he was even more muscular than when Friday had seen him last. He had the lean look of someone who did a lot of exercise.
"You look good too, Mel," said Binky. "Although, even if you look terrible, you'd look good to me, because I'm just that pleased to see you."
"Come and sit down and tell us all about it," said Melanie. "I'm sure Friday will be able to sort it all out for you."
"Oh, I don't know, Mel," said Binky. "It's not like at school with the headmaster. These army officers are devilishly serious fellows. They won't stand for malarkey at all." But Binky, said Friday, you're not a malarkey type of guy. I know, said Binky. That's what I thought too. But I did get hit in the head, so I was a bit addled. I may have acted out of character. Who knows?
Head injuries don't cause personality transformation, said Friday. Take me through what happened, and I'll see if I can sort it out.
Well, for the last 2 months, I've been stationed on the island of Svalbard, said Binky.
Really? Said Friday.
An island? That sounds nice, said Melanie.
Svalbard is in the Arctic Circle, said Friday.
Oh, that sounds not so nice, said Melanie.
It's another 1,500 kilometres north of the mainland of Norway, said Friday. It's really cold. You think of all those movies that come out at Christmas time about Santa and his workshop? It's that kind of climate.
Yes, said Binky, it does get a bit nippy. But the army give us really top-notch coats. And if you still get cold, eventually you lose the ability to feel, and then it's not so bad.
There are only two things on Svalbard, coal mines and the global seed vault, said Friday. So unless there's a secret installation there, I'm guessing your job was to guard the seed vault?
Yes, that's right, said Binky.
Well, why would anyone need to guard seeds, asked Melanie.
Because they're really important, said Friday. Any nation in the world can lodge a deposit of seeds there as a secure backup. It's in case war or disease destroys their agricultural infrastructure.
Okay, said Melanie, but I'm still imagining the seed rack at the garden centre, and I've never seen one of those under armed guard.
I know these days everyone likes to think about buying smartphones and smartwatches and ridiculous overpriced sneakers, said Friday, but we can literally live without all those things. We can't live without food. Being able to grow food is super important. If food supply collapses, the whole of civilization collapses.
Yes, said Binky. The Norwegians are very proud to have the global seed vault. It's on Svalbard because they had an old coal mine and they realized it was the coldest tectonically stable hole in the world.
So how did you end up face down in the snow? Asked Friday.
They say I left my post, said Binky.
Did you? Asked Friday.
Well, yes, said Binky. There were two of us on duty, and we're meant to stay inside the guard post. To be honest, it's so cold outside that staying inside is really the nicest thing to do. But periodically, one of us has to go out and walk the perimeter of the facility to check everything is okay.
And that's what you did? Asked Friday.
No, said Binky. That's what Jonas did.
Jonas was the other person on guard duty, asked Friday.
Yes, said Binky. No one likes Jonas. That's why he's on Svalbard. Everyone in Norway has to do 2 years of national service in the army, so there are lots of fellows who really don't want to be there. Jonas is one of them. Everybody got fed up with him. They sent him to Svalbard to finish out his term where he couldn't cause trouble.
Why did they send you to Svalbard? Asked Melanie. Did people find you hard to work with?
Oh, no, not at all, said Binky. I've been getting on well with everyone and having a lovely time in the army. I like all the outdoor stuff. I don't often understand what's going on or why we're doing things, but I'm just a corporal, so I don't need to. I just do as I'm told. They like it when you do as you're told.
So how did you end up in Svalbard? Asked Friday.
Well, you know Ingrid's father, said Binky.
The King of Norway, yes, we know him, said Friday.
Well, he's really beloved here, said Binky. Everyone likes to make him happy, and no one has ever actually said anything to me, but I have noticed how every time I go to Oslo to visit Ingrid, a couple of days later, I get posted somewhere more, I don't know the word for it,
horrible, guessed Friday.
I wouldn't say it like that, said Binky. I'm tremendously grateful to serve Norway and be given an opportunity to earn the king's respect, but I have been sent to a series of extremely challenging posts. My last mission was to the border of Russia, where my orders were to build a latrine.
Well, toilets are important, said Melanie.
Oh, certainly, said Binky, but they already had a latrine. It was very nice. I'm not sure why they needed another one. And before that, I was stationed at the Arctic Warfare Learning Academy.
That sounds interesting, said Friday.
Yes, soldiers from all around the world go to train there, said Binky. They learn how to operate in extreme cold. It was my job to act as the operation objective.
What did that involve, asked Friday.
They dropped me in the middle of the wilderness and I had to evade capture, said Binky.
Were you good at that, asked Friday.
Yes, it wasn't the type of thing you want to be good at, though, said Binky. If I got captured, they'd take me back to the barracks, where it was warm and there were lots of hot meals. If I didn't get captured, I had to survive out in the wilderness for days. It was a bit like fox hunting, if I was the fox and the hunters had all the latest military equipment. Thump, thump, thump.
They were interrupted by someone banging at the door.
40 minutes till Hurlston din, Pelly, called a guard.
Crikey, he says we've only got 40 minutes, said Binky. Can you figure it out in that time?
Take me through exactly what happened, said Friday.
Well, Jonas went out to inspect the perimeter, began Binky. It was snowing really hard.
So the visibility was poor, asked Friday.
Yes, I think if I hadn't been there, he wouldn't have bothered, said Binky. They never see anything on a perimeter inspection. I mean, the vault is a really deep hole in the ground. There's no way anyone can get in anywhere except the main tunnel.
What about people approaching the tunnel, said Friday. Don't you have to watch for them?
We do, but it's not very hard, said Binky. The only way anyone can get into the entrance is by driving up the hill or riding a snowmobile up. Either way, you can see and hear them coming for miles.
So it's impossible to be taken by surprise, said Friday.
Absolutely, said Binky. We actually know someone is coming before they even get to the island, because all the incoming ships and airplanes are tracked by satellite and radar. It's impossible to sneak up on the seed vault. We were expecting a shipment from Spain, but that wasn't until the afternoon. But someone has to sit and watch the front door. It's protocol.
And you always follow protocol? Asked Friday.
Oh, yes, said Binky. You have to in the military, or you get yelled at. And in Norwegian, which is even more confusing than being yelled at in English.
I can imagine, said Friday.
So Jonas went out on patrol, said Binky.
How long does a normal patrol take? Asked Friday.
Well, if all you do is walk around the perimeter, said Binky, that takes 7 minutes. But sometimes Jonas takes longer.
How much longer? Asked Friday.
Oh, sometimes 2 or 3 hours, said Binky. And he comes back in a really good mood, smelling of beer.
I see, said Friday.
So I was sitting in the guard box, watching, when a movement caught my eye, said Binky. There was obviously a lot of movement because of the snowstorm, but most of that movement was straight down. That was the direction the snow was falling. This was different. This looked like something moving purposely along the ground, along the top of the hill at the back of the seed vault, and it was heading in the direction that Jonas had just taken.
A person? Asked Friday.
I wouldn't have been worried too much about a person, said Binky. Jonas did have a machine gun with him, and when you're carrying a machine gun, people become extremely polite.
I'm sure they do, said Friday.
It was hard to see into the distance through the snow, said Binky, but the thing I saw looked like a polar bear.
Do you often see them? Asked Friday.
Not really, said Binky. They tend to stay away from town, but there are a lot on the island, and the seed vault is at the edge of the township. There's nothing on the other side of the hill except snow and tundra, so there's lots of bears out there.
That's nice, said Melanie.
Oh no, said Binky. I know polar bears look cute in photographs, and children have soft toy polar bears, but in real life, they are terrifying. They are absolutely huge, and they will grab you by the back of your neck and shake you until your spine snaps. Jonas might have been annoying, but I didn't want that to happen to him.
So you left your post, said Friday.
Not at first, because, you know, protocol. I tried to contact Jonas by radio, said Binky. But he wasn't responding. I don't know why. The snowstorm was heavy, but the Norwegian equipment is very good and designed to cope with that. Anyway, he didn't respond. I was worried that the polar bear had got to him already.
So then you left your post, said Friday.
Yes, said Binky. I felt I had to. Had to save Jonas.
What happened next? Asked Friday.
I walked up the hill as fast as I could with the thick snow, said Binky. But when I got to the top, I couldn't see anything. The far side is just a big snow-covered plain. If Jonas had fallen over, the snow would have covered him quickly. He could have been anywhere.
What did you do? Asked Friday.
I tried to remember my training, said Binky. But there hadn't been any protocols on how to respond when your guard partner is eaten by a polar bear. So I was standing there, thinking hard, when all of a sudden, there was a terrible, deafening roar of a bear behind me. I spun around. A huge white paw smashed me across the face.
Binky pointed to the lump on his forehead to show where he'd been hit.
That's the last thing I remember. Apparently, Dr. Finsberg, he's the science fellow who runs the facility, found me face down in the snow.
And he reported you? Asked Melanie.
Oh, he had to, said Binky. I needed medical attention for the bump on the head. I was very confused. I kept talking about lost tortoises.
Did Jonas back you up? Asked Friday. Did he see the polar bear?
Oh, Jonas wouldn't back me up, said Binky, even if he had seen a herd of polar bears.
An aurora, said Friday. The collective noun for polar bears is an aurora.
Well, they don't aurora much, said Binky. Polar bears don't get on with each other very well. A bit like me and Jonas. Anyway, he can't stand me. He was positively gleeful to get me out of there.
Thump, thump, thump. The guard banged on the door again.
Titilaga, Peli, called the guard.
Oh, gosh, said Binky. It's time. What am I going to do?
You are going to walk free from here, said Friday. Well, you'll walk free from this base, and then you'll probably have to go back to your post, because I can prove what happened.
That I really was attacked by a polar bear? Asked Binky.
No, said Friday. I can prove what really happened. Binky was marched from the guardhouse down a corridor to the courtroom by a sergeant, in step behind him, who clipped out orders the whole way.
Stop! Make for again! Barked the sergeant.
Binky snapped to attention. Friday and Melanie followed them inside. The courtroom was cold, not in temperature, but in every other way. For a start, it was a surprisingly small room, but also disappointingly bureaucratic. The floor was blue linoleum and the walls were dull grey. The only furniture was a long laminate table behind which three senior officers sat, and a smaller table where a captain was waiting with a few papers spread in front of him. The most impressive thing about the tableau was the uniforms. The three senior officers looked intimidating. They were not in ceremonial uniform, but they weren't in fatigues either. They were wearing their first-class uniforms, with all the insignia, to identify which missions they'd fought in and which medals they'd won. The captain, sitting on his own, Friday immediately guessed, was Binky's lawyer. He didn't have as many ribbons, and unlike the other three men, his body language didn't in any way suggest that he could kill you with his bare hands. There was also a younger man wearing everyday fatigues. He was standing at the back of the room, looking uncomfortable to be there. Friday guessed this was the main witness for the prosecution, Jonas. Finally, there was a middle-aged man in a very practical-looking snow coat. It wasn't hard to work out who he was, because the words Dr. Finsberg, Svalbard Global Seed Vault were embroidered on the chest.
Who are these young women? Asked the colonel, sitting in the central position behind the desk. He didn't address his question to Friday or Melanie, but to the lawyer.
Sir, I believe Corporal Pelly contacted his family, said the lawyer. These may be his sisters.
Melanie and Friday looked nothing alike, so this was not immediately believable.
I'm Binky's sister Melanie, said Melanie.
This court did not give you leave to speak, young lady, snapped the colonel. This is a closed hearing.
Oh, I know, said Melanie, not at all perturbed at being reprimanded by a military officer. I'm sure I don't need to be here, but I brought my brother's legal representation, Friday Barnes.
Friday glanced at Melanie. Her friend did not often lie, certainly not so blatantly, but she had to hand it to Melanie. She did know how to pick her moments. If Melanie had not made the outrageous claim that Friday was a lawyer, they would have certainly been thrown out of the room.
You are a lawyer? Asked the colonel.
I have extensive experience representing clients in cases such as these, said Friday, which was an entirely true statement. A lot of thoughts were whirring through Friday's mind as she said this, and one of them was she was pretty sure she could never be a lawyer because of her criminal record. But Friday decided that this colonel did not need to know that. Certainly not now.
Corporal Pelly already has legal representation, said the colonel.
But he is entitled to legal representation of his own choosing, said Melanie, and he chose Ms. Barnes.
Because he was standing at attention, Binky was not allowed to turn and look at his sister while she told these outrageous falsehoods. The colonel glowered at him.
Is this true, Pelly?
Sir, yes, sir, said Binky.
I cannot for the life of me understand why you should think you need special legal representation, said the colonel. Courts martial are not places for soaring rhetoric. This isn't like courtroom dramas on TV. It's about facts, justice, and punishment.
Quite, agreed Friday. But there won't be any need for punishment today if justice is upheld. The facts clearly show that my client is entirely innocent. Binky made an involuntary guttural noise on hearing this audacious statement, which he tried his best to suppress.
I do not appreciate theatrics, young lady, said the colonel.
My age and gender are immaterial, said Friday. I can prove, based on the facts, that Binky is innocent.
The colonel sighed. He may have been grumpy, but he was an intelligent man, and he deduced that it would be easier just to let Friday say what she wanted to say.
Get on with it then, said the colonel.
Binky says that he went out into the snow to protect Jonas from a polar bear, said Friday. Jonas was standing at attention too, and he couldn't turn his head, but he did glare at Friday out of the corner of his eye.
But when he got to the top of the rise, continued Friday, he couldn't see Jonas or the bear. Yes, I know, said the colonel. I have read his ridiculous, fanciful statement.
That's not a very impartial attitude to bring into a legal proceeding, said Friday. But no matter. At this point, Binky heard the polar bear roar behind him. As he turned, a white paw hit him in the side of the head, and he collapsed in the snow.
Yes, yes, we've all read this, said the colonel.
But what Binky thinks happened cannot be true, said Friday.
I thought you were meant to be defending me, said Binky.
I am, Friday assured him, but you're wrong. So the only way I can defend you is by contradicting you. Oh, said Binky. He was very confused, but he had complete faith in Friday, so he didn't mind.
There is no way Binky could have been attacked by a polar bear, said Friday. For a start, polar bears don't roar. They're capable of making a variety of guttural noises and clicking sounds, but they don't roar when they attack. They'd starve to death if they roared every time they attacked a seal or whatever it was they were hunting. Whenever you see a bear attack depicted in a movie, they usually have to use lion or other big cat sounds for the sound effects because bear noises are actually underwhelming.
So he made that up, said the Colonel.
No, I didn't say that, said Friday. Binky sincerely believes he was attacked by a polar bear.
I was hit in the face by a big white paw, said Binky.
That's another fact that disproves your story, said Friday. Polar bear paws are not white, not on the underside. If you had been hit across the face by a polar bear, the big black pads of its paw would have been what you saw coming towards you.
But I know I was hit because I've got this big lump on my head, said Binky,
pointing to the large red lump. Yes, agreed Friday. But that disproves your story too. A polar bear can't have given you that lump because polar bear paws are huge. They're designed to disperse weight over as much surface area as possible so they don't fall through the ice. If a polar bear hit you in the face, you wouldn't get one distinctive lump just on your forehead because your whole face would have taken the force of the blow.
So he hit his head on a rock when he fell, said the Colonel.
Was there a rock? Friday turned to Dr. Finsberg.
When you found Binky in the snow, I presume you rolled him over to see if he's all right, was there a rock under his head?
Well, I don't know, said Dr. Finsberg. He seemed to be uncomfortable as we asked a question. That's not really my area of expertise. I'm not a geologist.
Friday sighed. Her own parents were like this, experts in a very specific field of science, but clueless about everything else, including basic life skills.
I'll tell you. The answer is no, said Friday. The snow was falling hard. The snow on the ground was over 2 feet deep. When Binky collapsed, the snow would have cushioned his fall.
Well, you're doing a good job proving the prosecution's case for them, said the Colonel. He wasn't attacked by a polar bear. He was derelict in his duties.
Not at all, said Friday, because someone went out of their way to make Binky believe he was being attacked by a polar bear.
That's farcical, said the Colonel.
Exactly, said Friday. What could possibly be the motive for such a farcical crime? To discredit Binky. Binky is a wonderful man, but no offence, Binky, not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Oh, that's okay, said Binky. It's entirely true. All my teachers always said much the same thing, sometimes using language that was nowhere near as nice.
And that lump on Binky's head proves it, said Friday, because the only way he could have got that lump is if someone hit him in the head with something hard, perhaps a rock. And there was only one person there that night, Jonas.
What, said Jonas? I'm not on trial.
No, said Friday. Not yet. But the only way this series of facts can be explained is if it was you who snuck up behind Binky, played a recording of an animal roaring, then, using something white wrapped around your hand, picked up a rock and bashed Binky about the head.
Why would he do something so theatrically ridiculous? Asked the Colonel.
I'm glad you asked, said Friday. She was beginning to enjoy herself. Motivation is often the most interesting element of a crime. Jonas didn't like Binky, but we know Jonas is essentially lazy because he liked to go down to the bar in town and drink when he was supposed to be on patrol.
Gosh, said Binky, is that why you always smelled of beer?
He liked the post-in at the Svalbard Seed Vault because he was left alone, said Friday. So he would have been annoyed when Binky was stationed with him. But that wasn't motivation enough. We must ask ourselves, who else would want to see Binky dishonourably discharged from the military? Melanie gasped.
The King of Norway!
That's a treasonous suggestion, said the Colonel.
I'm sure the King would never arrange something like this, said Friday. But often, important people have members of staff who like to anticipate what they want, but are too polite to ask for. These loyal staffers then make it happen without ever receiving direct instructions.
That is something that's definitely impossible to prove, said the Colonel.
We'll see, said Friday, turning to Jonas. When Binky was transferred to Svalbard, did anyone from the King's staff contact you?
That's crazy, said Jonas.
It wouldn't be so strange, argued Friday. Binky is the princess's boyfriend. Someone from the royal staff might ask you to keep an eye on him, or to make sure he stayed warm, or they might suggest that if you did something to discredit Binky, the palace would be pleased. Jonas's expression did not change. It would be easy enough to prove if you had a conversation with someone at the palace, said Friday. Thanks to computerized phone records, we could soon find out when they were called, from which phone number, and how long you spoke for. Jonas was silent for several moments while he weighed his options.
Someone at the palace did call, he conceded. But there's nothing wrong with that. You can't prove anything. You can't prove what they said.
Hmm, said Friday.
Do you have a smartphone?
Yes, said Jonas. Is it in your pocket? Asked Friday.
No, said Jonas, a little too hastily.
He's lying, said Melanie.
Yes, I know, said Friday. I can see the rectangular lump in his pants pocket from here. It's too small to be a book, and it's too big to be a packet of gum. It is, in fact, the exact size of a smartphone.
Produce the phone, snapped the colonel. Jonas reluctantly drew the phone out of his pocket. Friday took it from his hand.
If I were to look at the audio recordings on this phone, would I find any loud animal sounds? Asked Friday.
You'd need a search warrant, said Jonas, as he tried to snatch it back.
Oh, you're thinking of civilian law, said Friday, turning away so he couldn't grab it. She started pressing buttons and typing in codes, hacking through the phone's security systems.
You have way less rights to privacy when you're living in an army base.
Speaking of which, she glanced up at Jonas and then went back to typing in codes on the phone. Your uniform is military issue. It belongs to the government, and the Norwegian Army Arctic jacket has a white faux fur lining in the hood. If I rang your billet in Svalbard and asked them to search your things, would they find that the hood from your snowsuit had been cut off so you could make an improvised polar bear paw?
Sweat was visibly beginning to appear on Jonas's forehead. He cracked.
It wasn't my idea. I was only following orders.
Orders from who? Asked the colonel.
The king's personal secretary, said Jonas.
Sir Eirik Larsen, said Binky. I know him. He's a very smart fellow. Although he does make a strange tutting noise every time he sees me.
Here we go, said Friday. She hit enter on the phone and held it out to the room.
Roar!
An animal roar blared out. It was a terrifying sound. All the officers flinched. Friday looked at the phone again. It's even labelled. Tiger roar, proving my earlier point.
You'd better explain yourself, Corporal Jonas, demanded the colonel.
Sir Eirik said the king liked to reward enterprising young soldiers who'd been helpful, said Jonas, who'd gone above and beyond the normal line of duty. He said Binky was an embarrassment to the palace. It was a problem. No one knew what to do.
I could tell what he was asking. The colonel shook his head. You are in a lot of trouble, young man. You have framed a fellow soldier, and you've made a very serious accusation against a senior civil servant.
He framed a polar bear too, said Melanie.
The charges against Corporal Pelly have been dismissed, announced the colonel.
And so, a short time later, it was Jonas who was taken back to the guardhouse, while Binky followed Friday and Melanie out into the fresh air.
We should go somewhere to celebrate, said Melanie.
But Binky burst into tears.
Sorry, Mel, he said,
wiping them away with his cuff.
It's been very stressful. You've no idea how relieved I am.
He suddenly turned on Friday and gave her a big hug.
How can I ever thank you, he said. I thought I'd never get to see Ingrid again.
It's okay, Binky, said Friday, patting him on the back. Everything's okay now. Melanie handed Binky a tissue and he blew his nose loudly. Come on. I saw a lovely truck stop just up the road, said Melanie. I'll buy you a big chocolate milkshake. That'll cheer you up.
Oh, yes, please, said Binky.
And that is the end of the story. So we'll leave it there. Until next week, goodbye.